You're listening to... Offering in-depth analysis on all things Boston Celtics with your hosts, Jim and Mike Quigley.
It's 1-0, Mike. The Celtics ball at the Cleveland Cavaliers in game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals. And, you know, kind of more of the same over the first six games of these playoffs, where a non-competitive game, you know, for the most part, even through the first three quarters when it was a 10 to 14 point game or whatever it was, it never felt like the Cavs had any control over the game whatsoever. It felt like the Celtics dictated everything. And, you know, I thought the Celtics were the better team offensively. I thought they were the better team defensively. They were the better team on the glass. They were a better team to the hustle. They were a better team creating turnovers. They were a better team getting to the free throw line. They were just better in every area than the Cavs, which, you know, the way it should be, but it isn't always how it works. And you have another blowout of a season of blowouts. And, you know, I think probably as fans and as media, we're getting kind of comfortable. And so I posed a question to you, Mike. Do you have any concerns with the team itself getting comfortable as we go into game two tonight at the Garden?
No, my only concern, certainly do with them. We've seen them get comfortable, right? So that's definitely possible. I'm not concerned about the Celtics losing this series. I still think it could go deep. I know we talked about in earlier pods that I think Cleveland's just a different team at home than they are on the road. I think they're a bad road team. They looked like a really bad road team in Orlando.
They did.
And quite honestly, I thought they were night and day at home in that series. And you see a lot of that with good teams and not great teams in the playoffs. And the Celtics have a history of running into teams like this. And so I'm interested to see what that looks like. Obviously, Cleveland will have some adjustments, which we'll talk about. If we're talking about things that concern me, I think the one thing that concerns me is Jason Tatum's shooting. It's just, it hasn't been great. He's at 29% from three for the playoffs. So now six games in, he's doing a lot of other things well, which is important. Obviously his rebounding numbers are not as good as Josh Hart's, but they're still really impressive. His assist numbers are up. He's causing double and triple teams, like crazy, crazy things that he's seeing, really crazy defensive looks. And he's adjusted well to them. He's not turning the ball over. For the most part, he's finishing at the rim. But yeah, his outside shot it doesn't look good. And I know that's been something of an issue in past playoffs too. So they'll need that, because right now I feel like Brown and White are really carrying the team. And with their shooting, they're shooting lights out. Brown's been shooting lights out for feels like forever. But I guess those are my small concerns.
Yeah, I wonder actually if teams are going to, maybe the Cavs will gamble on this and adjust the way they're defending because of Tatum shooting. I think you, and you saw that late in the fourth, and it just opened up driving lanes where they kind of took away the double, and Tatum could just square his shoulders and find out who he wanted to go up against and get to the hoop. And so it's kind of pick your poison in that sense. You saw the Cavs run a little bit of zone, but I agree. You'd really like to see a shooting get going. I like the fact that he's not forcing it. I think he took a total of 16 shots over the course of the game. And so this isn't a situation where he's saying, I need to get myself going. It's more, let's just play within the flow and get the win and get out of here. So I do like that. But, you know, hopefully it does. Maybe it's tonight. But they are going to need it, you know, whether it's next series against the Knicks or, you know, hopefully in the NBA Finals against what will, you know, probably be an excellent defensive team. I guess I just look at this and I definitely worry about the Celtics getting too comfortable. Like you said, we've seen it so often over the last few seasons where they're in a position to really take a stranglehold on a series and they just let one kind of slip away, and they really almost go like a whole game of sleepwalking and not doing the things they need to do. And so if I'm the Cavs, you know, I know you talk about them being much better at home. I just still look at this as an opportunity based on this team's past. And you can't let game one get you down. You know, the Celtics don't get to carry any of those points over tonight. So what can they do? And maybe, you know, the one thing I kind of look back, if I'm Bernie Bickerstaff, is what Donovan Mitchell did in that Orlando series over the course of the last six quarters, where he just attacked them really early. And it's kind of what you have to do against these big, physical, long defenses that can switch well and are athletic. You can't let them get set up, even off a make. And the Cavs did that a couple times where they got out and ran and ended up getting easy hoops over the course of the game. But what Mitchell was able to do in Orlando is he really attacked that middle of the paint within 5-6 seconds of the offensive possession and put pressure on the Cavs the Magic defense to do something about it. What the Magic did well is they didn't leave shooters in that course. So it was really Mitchell one-on-one. And we know what happened there. He got going and was excellent. But I wonder if they hope to do this against the Celtics. And this, maybe the Celtics get lazy in their approach. Mitchell makes a couple, and all of a sudden, you know, help's coming off Max Strus. And now Mitchell can kick it out, and you get a couple threes going. You have late switches, and Evan Mobley gets going on a few easy ones, and then he's able to face up and make a three or two. I think if I'm Cleveland, that's what I have to do. And the other thing I can't let happen if I'm the Cavs is I cannot let the Celtics have as much success on the offensive glass as they did in this last game. That was a killer. I felt like even in the possessions the Celtics didn't score. It just had to be, you know.
Well, Luke Kornet was a big part of that. I think that, yeah. I mean, the Celtics had
even in the guards too. Holiday, how many times did he creep in for offensive rebounds?
Yeah, the problem was the Celtics weren't finishing, yet still maintaining a lead. I mean, the problem for the Celtics.
Until the fourth quarter, and then they just felt like they couldn't miss.
But they gotta put those back, what I'm saying, those second-chance opportunities. They got a lot of offensive rebounds, the Celtics, and they didn't score in those possessions.
Yeah, no, they didn't. But I felt like it was just it was a sink and failing for the Cavs either way because you're already so outmanned. And you're so out-talented, and you're not even winning that part of the game. Jared Allen obviously makes a big difference if he's coming back.
But, huge difference.
Yeah.
Not having him is huge because the Celtics aren't a great defensive rebounding team, and Cleveland has no advantage there now to crash the glass offensively, and they're getting killed on the other end. The other thing with Cleveland is when they have opportunities, they're walking the fucking ball up.
Well, that's what I mean. They have to go quick. They have to go really quick. Yeah.
Even when they get a turnover, like I think part of it too, though, Jen, and we definitely saw it in the fourth quarter. I think there was a lack of legs. I think they looked a bit tired. I think we might see a little bit more of that tonight.
Oh, Mitchell certainly was. Mitchell, I think, from carrying that load is getting exhausted. Yeah.
Well, they just came off a physical series. Those Orlando guards, they get up in you. They bump you, they hit you. They're very similar to Miami and the New York Knicks. They present a lot of size. So you hope if you're Cleveland that the guys got a lot of rest with this day off in between this game too. But they didn't look sharp. I expect a different Cleveland team tonight. I expect them to keep it a little bit closer. But I don't know, despite all these adjustments, can they stop Jaylen Brown from getting to where he wants to go? And are they going to adjust their defense to Jason Tatum and let him go to the basket? Are they going to continue to triple and double Tatum and let him find guys wide open? How do you make those adjustments? Do they have to go zone?
I think it all depends on their
offense. If the Celtics are playing the right way, even with Cleveland's adjustments on the offensive end, the Celtics should win this game because I just don't feel like without Allen in the paint to take away the rim, I don't know what they're supposed to do defensively to make consistent stops because the Celtics missed a ton of open shots too. This could have been a 30-point game in the third quarter.
Sure, could have. I think with or without Allen, it's about their offense, Cleveland, and getting early and getting the shooters going. If their shooters get going, it changes the game entirely. And it puts a little bit more pressure on the Celtics on the other end. It allows you to set up your defense. It just changes everything. I think you got to, if I'm Cleveland, I want them to go quick. And then I'm hoping that the Celtics stop, you know, making some mistakes and leaving shooters or bringing help to Garland and Mitchell. And things kind of start rolling downhill from there, similar to what you saw in game two against the Heat. And you hit 15 to 20 threes. And you win the three-point battle, which if they want to win a game, they have to win the three-point battle. There is no other arithmetic that works for them. They have to win the three-point battle versus Celtics to have any shot. And then you can set up your defense and hope the Celtics get tight, maybe miss a few, and things like that start to happen. But to me, that's a recipe for them right now. And it's not, it's hard, but I don't think it's an impossible recipe. It's certainly against the Celtics, who have had a propensity, blah, 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 show the ability to kind of play down and not show up in these moments. So, I get what you're saying, that the Celtics should get whatever they want offensively, regardless of who's out there. But I think for Cleveland, it's about the other side of the ball. I really do.
Yeah. So they need guys like George Niang and Max Strauss to be able to get some shots off.
Yes.
Even Evan Mobley. He's hit some threes in the Orlando series. So Celtics have stayed with the
Phoenix. Okoro. And they, you know, for a month of the season, they were the best team in the NBA. The schedule helped them there. But they shot the ball incredibly, incredibly well for that month of the season. The rest of the season, they might not even have been a playoff team record-wise. But for that month, so there's the ability to do it in spurts for them, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So we'll see what they bring tonight. I don't know if there's much more to talk about in this series. Talking about game one, obviously White and Brown were awesome, but I thought the defense, again, that Pritchard and Cornette brought. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
And then the rebounding that Cornette brought. And I got to be honest, Jim, there's times where I'm watching the game and I think the Celtics are better with him on the floor over Horford. Obviously, Horford's the better player, but Cornette's bringing things to the defensive end that they need, and his rebounding is huge. So that's been huge for the Celtics. The bench has stepped up in basically all six games. Maybe not game two of the Miami series, but pretty much throughout the entire series, throughout the entire playoffs, they've played a huge role.
Yeah, the developmental team for the Celtics, and how they changed this Cornette's game, where he was a face-up three-point shooter for the first part of his NBA career and his college career, to now just being a rim runner and on both ends of the floor is really impressive. And it's probably going to help Cornette's earnings and do wonders for his career, you know, and staying in this league. So kudos to what the Celtics, they saw a change that needed to be made. They saw they needed something for their team, probably with a concern of Rob Williams' injury at the time. And they did a heck of a job. And you're right. He's defensively, he's a huge deterrent. He's a great defensive rebounder. And he's been really, really helpful for them. And if Jared Allen does come back, I think he plays even more of a central role in this, right? So it's been a good showing from him. Yeah. Other than that, I don't know what else to say other than, you look at the injury situation and, I thought it was encouraging that Porzingis was out at practice and walking around. I don't think he's anywhere close to being back for this series, but I don't think it would shock anyone now if he's lacing up game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, which is, great news for Celtics fans and the Celtics team. So the arrows are all pointing in the right direction for the Celtics in the East on how this thing is lined up.
Just stay hungry. Go out there and win tonight and have an opportunity in Cleveland to come back 3-1. Don't go in there tonight and not be focused and lose this game, because I guarantee you, you're not coming back 3-1. if you lose tonight. It's going to be 2-2, and you're looking at least a 6-game series. So you got to take care of home court like you did all year. You dominated Cleveland in the 2 home games in a back-to-back home and home early in the season. Just dominated them at home. Quite honestly, you should have dominated them in Cleveland, but you just blew that lead. Go out there tonight and take care of business, because I have a feeling game 5 will be an elimination game. That's what we'll be talking about.
I think this is 5. Yeah, I said that at the outset. I think,
but if they lose, yep, if they lose tonight, Jim, we're going 6 or 7. So I think you got to take care of business tonight and put a stranglehold on this team and just show them that you're not competing in this series.
I think it goes 5, even if they lose tonight. I think this is over early, but I've been wrong before.
They're not going to sleep in Cleveland. No way.
Oh, I think it's entirely possible. I got some questions for you for around the league and media wise. Are you ready for them?
Yeah.
All right. Let's go first. Give me your thoughts just initially on this New York's Pacers series. You know, probably the best series so far. Knicks take a 2-0 lead, do that despite losing Brunson for a full quarter last night. Do the Pacers, is this series over? And what do the Pacers have to do to get back into it?
The Pacers are going to win at home. I think they can. I think this can still go deep, but I think it's over. I also think that the Knicks have been getting the end of game one was atrocious. That was atrocious.
Yeah.
They didn't even give Indiana a chance at the end of game one. I'm not sure about the officiating in game two. I watched it. There weren't points in the game where I was really flipping out. I thought that, the Knicks got the advantage at home, but the playoffs, you get the advantage of home calls in the playoffs.
It's been league-wide this year.
Boston Celtics, because everybody fucking hates the Celtics.
Well, the Celtics got a kind whistle in game one, I thought.
Ah, fuck that. I don't know if Indiana can win the series now. I really thought they had a shot. They obviously played. They kept these games close. They were really entertaining. The Knicks just have this ability to stay in it. They don't go away. They win close games. Guys step up. Like, Josh Hart's rebounding and three-point shooting and DiVincenzo's defense and three-point shooting have been really out of this world. The fact that they didn't split, I think the series is over. But I do think the series could still go 6 or 7. Indiana showed the ability to play with these guys and certainly score on them. So you would think at home the whistles will be a little bit different. But I also think Rick Carlisle made a huge mistake. I don't think he should have took TJ McConnell out of the game in the fourth quarter. I thought that was a huge mistake.
Yeah, McConnell got wherever he wanted all game long.
Not only that, he's the only guy on the team that can stay in front of Brunson. And you couldn't double Brunson last night because everybody was hitting threes in New York. So one thing I will say about the Knicks is this is not sustainable. Josh Hart's played 48 minutes 2 games in a row. I'm pretty sure he played 48 minutes in the first round.
Four games is playoffs. He's already played 48 minutes.
Yeah, guys are getting hurt. Mitchell Robinson's out now. Precious Achiuwa actually looked good last night. But he doesn't really trust his bench guys. I mean, he's got Shake Milton and Alec Burke. He didn't go to them last night with guys out and guys hurt. I would be worried if I'm a Knicks fan about the war of attrition, because their games have been intense, all of them basically, in Philadelphia, now these first two at home. There's certainly a fatigue factor that's going to kick in. If not now, I could see it against the Celtics.
And OG Anunoby didn't play the second half with a hamstring. And so you got to worry about that if you're the Knicks. And you just do
that. That sucks. Hopefully he's going to play. Like, I'd love to see a New York-Boston series, but if OG's out, if he doesn't play, I don't know. Maybe the Pacers got a shot to take the series.
Well, you do worry about a war of attrition. And Mitchell Robinson's now out for the playoffs. And,
Huge loss.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said there for what you're saying about them wearing down. I think Tibbs is trying to get the maximum out of them, and probably their potential is getting out of the second round as their maximum. But a healthy Knicks team, I think they take the Celtics to 6, and you could potentially see a 7-game series. They are relentless. They have a little bit of that Heat feeling to them that the Celtics have ran into the last couple of years. Brunson is a remarkable player.
And they probably have the best home crowd in the NBA.
Yeah, the crowd has been really, really tough to play in front of. But, you know, I think the Celtics team is, I don't think that bothers them as much. They seem to, over the last few playoffs, be able to go into anywhere.
Now, how hurt is
play better than they do at home? So
yeah, how hurt is Bogdanović? Is he
Bogdanović is done for the playoffs?
Oh my god!
Yeah, so they've thinned out remarkably.
I don't understand. I mean, Tibbs is a great coach. I guess I just have a hard time. Jake Milton and Alec Burke have been good offensive players their entire careers. I guess I'm just having a hard time. Like, why doesn't he give him a shot to get some minutes? He obviously doesn't need to. They've won every game, but
it's what Tibbs does. It's what he does. He rides his best players and he rides them until there's nothing left. And you'll see how far. I mean, if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals with all the injuries, maybe he did what he did, you know, and what he could. I thought last night was just such a bad loss for Indiana. They were up 10 at halftime. They gave up 70 points in the second half, or just about, right, to the Knicks.
Their defense was a great
offensive team. Really shows the problems that the Pacers have defensively. You know, Miles Turner, once again, it's like show up sometimes, show up, not show up other times.
Big no show last night.
Yeah, Siakam, sometimes an impact player, you know, and Halliburton, I thought in the second half, just wasn't good. So
it's almost like their best player sometimes is their rookie.
Yeah. And then Shepard's been really good for them. That has to hurt. You know, that has to hurt not getting that one. Now they have to win both against a team that doesn't quit. You know, so if you get up 15 at home against them in game three going into the fourth quarter, it's not like you're going to be able to cruise to that victory. The Knicks are going to just keep coming at you. So
that's what I love about the Knicks.
Yeah, so it's a tough spot. My second question, Mike, give me your thoughts. Can the Nuggets make this a long series?
They will.
Number one, and then part two to that, did Jamal Murray deserve a suspension?
The Nuggets
Should have he gotten a suspension?
Yeah, I think the Timberwolves win in six now. So I do think the Nuggets make it a long series. I don't think they're going to win. I think losing your first two games at home. We've seen a history of it. We've seen teams win four straight games after losing two at home. Mm-hmm. It has happened in the NBA. But I think they take one in Minnesota, then they probably win game five in Minnesota. There'd be a lot of pressure on Minnesota, but I think they take it in six. I take into account the way Anthony Edwards is playing. I think that's a big deal. The fact that they just won without Rudy Gobert. The bench for Minnesota is way better than Denver's. It's not even close. Naz Reid is a problem. There's times where I think he's better than Karl Anthony Towns, as crazy as that sounds like.
Yeah.
I
can see where that's coming from.
Yeah. Yeah. Although Karl Anthony Towns' 3-point shooting has been out of this world, right? So, but I do think they make it a series. And number two, he should have been suspended. I don't understand. But I think the NBA wants to see this series not be a sweep. So they didn't do that. But, I think you're going after a referee like that. That's not okay. Even when the refs do a horrible job, they're kind of defenseless, right? So they can't really defend themselves against players. I don't think that's okay. I think that's a bitch move. And he should have been suspended.
Yeah, he threw two things on the floor. He threw a towel, and then he threw his heating pad, which is just, to me, that's...
It's a tantrum.
It's a guy that didn't want to be there. He wanted to get thrown out. You know, the Timberwolves put Jamal Murray in jail. They never allowed him to get going. They remarkably took the Nuggets out of that two-man game where, you know, anytime the Nuggets have an issue, they go to that two-man game and they're very deliberate. They get whatever shot they wanted. Timberwolves didn't let it happen. Yeah. And I thought Murray just quit. And that was his way of quitting. Throw me out of the game. And I absolutely think he should have been suspended. You throw something on the court as a fan, you're getting arrested, right? Because of the potential for injury. He threw something that a guy could have slipped on. And I know that's, you know, low percentage that that would happen, but it could have happened. And I just feel like, you know, $100,000 fine is a lot of money. And we want to keep guys playing. But, you know, and I thought the NBA made the same mistake, kind of an opposite situation in like 2016 or whatever, when Curry threw his mouthpiece into the crowd. I felt like he should have been suspended for that, too. And so, I don't know. You want to act like a baby, you should be punished like one. You want to act like a child, you should be punished like one. You should be grounded and you're not allowed to play.
And that's the thing with Denver. They really acted like babies, all of them.
Big time. Big time.
And it was physical defense. It was just physical defense. It was the Timberwolves showing we're not scared of you. And they just played more physical than Denver for two straight games. And the way Denver reacted was, why aren't we getting the calls? You know, people get on the Celtics like about this a lot. Denver's a champion, so they get slack. But that wasn't a good-looking game, too.
No, and I'm with you because common sense tells you this should go six, right? They're the champs. You expect a response here, especially in game three tomorrow night. But I've seen no evidence that that should happen over these first two games. It's been just dominant. These haven't been contests. And especially game two, it was not a contest. And
I would expect to see one thing. For Denver is guys like Michael Porter and Caldwell Pope. If they start hitting some threes, that could change the series a little bit.
It can.
Did Michael Porter really even miss against the Lakers? I don't know if you saw that LeBron James interview, but he was like, did he even miss? And J.J. Redick was like, well, there was one game where I actually didn't. That obviously, how do you cover a team with those two shooting when you have Jamal Murray and Jokic, but if those guys aren't hitting shots, this could be a sweep.
Yeah, but I would say this. I think it's a lot easier to get into rhythm when Murray's getting downhill and they're putting you into rotation and, you know, they're trying to throw traps at Murray and he's beating it, or they're getting into Jokic, a double's coming and he's beating it. The Lakers, you know, got beat off that stuff. Yeah. Minnesota's not letting that stuff happen. There is no penetration.
That's, you know, really
every
kudos.
Entry pass into Jokic has been hard. There's been high hands on everything. Like, so when Porter might be getting open shots, but they're not in rhythm, and they're late clock stuff, and it's a different feel. So,
and that's really kudos to Mike Conley and his on the ball defense, and Anthony Edwards and McDaniels, Kyle Anderson, and then these bigs and their ability to play with Jokic, which we haven't seen anybody do that in like 2 years.
No.
We haven't seen a big play Jokic well since Dwight Howard in the bubble. Like, we haven't seen him. He's just dominated everybody. And that's crazy to say that it was Dwight Howard who played him well. But it's like the last guy I remember seeing do anything against Jokic. So this is very, very impressive. And the league should be on notice right now, because Timberwolves could win this whole thing. They could.
Oh, yeah.
They've
been the best team in the playoffs.
By far. They haven't fucking lost the game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they've dominated. And it's gritty. It's tough. And then they got guys on the offensive end who can ball. Like Anthony Edwards, obviously, but this guy, Naz Reid. This is a scary team. This is a scary, deep team. I'd be scared going into a series against them.
There's been another team that's dominated outside of Minnesota and the Celtics. And
that's OKC.
Yeah, maybe we looked at this series incorrectly. I'm going to stick
with
my
game, but I'm thinking that too, Jim.
I'm going to stick with my Dallas pick, but they have the guys to cover Doncic and Kyrie and handle isolation basketball, which is what Dallas likes to play. And obviously, the Thunder put a lot of pressure on you defensively, especially a team that, you know, is probably playing outside their ability defensively a little bit in Dallas. And you saw the result in game one. Now, you know, it's one game. Teams make adjustments. I'm sure they're going to figure out ways to get Kyrie and Luka going. But Mike, are you changing your pick here?
Am I changing my pick? Yeah, I think the Thunder are going to win the series. Yeah, I do. I think that they looked really, really good in game one. This might be an overreaction, but you got Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren, and Josh Giddey all scoring over 20. And, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander all scoring over 20. That's really hard to stay with. They do have a lot of offensive firepower, the way they attack you. I think they can win the series, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not ready to change my pick yet. I do think Kyrie and Luka are going to get going, and I wonder how a young team is going to react once the ball starts going downhill a little bit on them.
That hasn't happened yet to OKC. There has really, like, similar to the Celtics, there's been no friction.
No, there's been no friction. But I will say, if, you know, this OKC team had a year or two playoff experience behind them, I think I'd probably be the other way on this series and saying that I believe this might be even a quick series for OKC.
The one thing that hurts OKC is if they get in foul trouble, which you certainly can against Luka and Kyrie, you can find yourself in serious foul trouble.
If Holmgren gets in foul trouble, they're screwed because they have nothing behind him.
Yeah. Like, Josh Giddey is a guy who gets in foul trouble traditionally. Yeah. And Gordon Hayward's been horrible in the playoffs. I think he went the entire first round without scoring a fucking point.
Wow.
Shocker there, right?
Yeah, Gordon Hayward not showing up in the playoffs. We never saw that happen here.
Yeah. I don't think they have much coming off their bench that would scare me at all. So that's a factor, how they respond when that friction happens, because they will get in foul trouble against this Mavericks team. So.
All right, last question, Mike, and we can wrap. The media, so local and national. My question is, what bothers you more, or does either one bother you at all? Obviously, there's been a conversation, I think, nationally led by Stephen A. Smith about, you know, Tatum's play because he's not making shots, and going to, you know, conversation about his heart, his willingness to do everything he has to do to be a champion. You have some of that locally. And then you have the bizarre conversation on the Sports Hub of, you know, even if the Celtics win it, it doesn't matter because it's going to be a weak championship.
Yeah. I'll start with the first one. It's one of those things that are like, I understand why it bothers people, the Tatum talk. But I also look at it as, like, I've seen this talk before about other guys as good as Tatum that hadn't won championships yet. That experienced a lot of success and also a lot of failure. The talk about LeBron James not being able to beat the Celtics and having to go to the Heat and the shit that he took. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure you would remember this better than I could, but, you know, could Michael Jordan win a championship was probably a conversation about him. And I'm not putting Tatum in that as good as those guys, but until his team does win a championship, this is what we can expect. And sometimes people aren't watching the games and they're just looking at the numbers. And this is what you're going to get when you just look at the numbers. You're going to see, oh, he was 2 for 9 from three, or what, like, this guy's, you know, he's turned into a puddle. And I think, like, with Tatum, there's been so many great moments in the playoffs. It's probably like 10 to 12 from where he's done dominant things and scored 40 plus points. But unfortunately, in this world, you pick one or two other things, and that's how you remember a guy. You remember a guy who didn't show up against Golden State, might have been hurt. You remember a guy who got hurt in Game 7 against Miami, and for some reason, the world holds that against star athletes. Probably another moment where he struggled and didn't show up in the Celtics loss, maybe in the bubble. So that's what's going to happen until he wins it. Fair or unfair, I'm not going to let it bother me because I feel like this is what all the star athletes in the NBA go through. Lesser in other sports. I think players in other sports don't have to deal with this like NBA players. The Felger and Maz stuff, they're a hockey radio station. They really don't care much about basketball, even though they pretend to. I don't think there's a guy on that network outside of Joe Murray that knows much about the game. not Jim Murray, Joe Murray, the bigger guy that does the night show, from the morning show, which is more like comedy, to the rest of the afternoon, their hockey, you know, Felger and Maz, their hockey. So, like, this is kind of expected. I don't think they like the Celtics, even though they're the broadcast for the Celtics. I don't think the guys on that show like basketball and like NBA plays. That's how I feel. So I don't let it bother me, and I think it's stupid. I think what Maz said was dumb. Like, are we going to say the 86 Celtics weren't that good because they didn't beat the Lakers? Because they beat the Rockets? Like, is that what we're going to do now? Come on, man. Are we going to say the 08 Celtics aren't that good because Andrew Bynum wasn't playing? Like, come on. Like, this is stupid. Are we going to say all those Cleveland teams that ended up beating Golden State at least one time wasn't good because they always went like 12-0 in the Eastern Conference before they made it to the finals because they didn't have a real opponent? No. Like, Kyrie and LeBron were fucking awesome. So, like, these conversations are dumb. And that's the end of it. Go watch fucking hockey.
Yeah, so, like, the Tatum's 26 years old. He, if he continues to play through the finals, I think he'll be the youngest, have the most points.